This is Marketplace. I'm Adrienne Hill. Reining in federal regulations is a major item on the to-do list of those in power right now. In Congress?
Ending the culture of overregulation. It's going to take more than a few months, but we have made a good start.
And in the White House?
Since taking office, I've signed one action after another to eliminate job-killing regulations that stand in a way.
Those are the voices of President Trump and Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. But how did this country become so regulation-focused in the first place? Chrissy Clark from our Wealth and Poverty Desk explores that question in the new season of Marketplace's documentary podcast, The Uncertain Hour. Today, Chrissy brings us a story of how one homemaker's life intersected with the growing regulation of something very basic to all of our lives, food.
By the time Ruth Desmond was a grandmother in the 1970s, she'd earned a reputation as a powerful consumer activist in our nation's capital. Newspapers called her the, quote, terror of Washington, who spit in the corporate eye.
She did, but nicely.
Ruth Desmond died in 1988 in her 80s, but this woman with the laugh, Janet Swager, knew her well. Way before Ruth was a grandmother or a food activist.
I'm her angel of a daughter. She always called me her angel.
Janet was Ruth's only child. They were always close. Apparently, they had the same laugh. And growing up in the 1950s, Janet spent a lot of time with her mom in the kitchen of their small brick house in Arlington, Virginia. Janet still lives there now. She's 76.
When you look at this room and picture your mom, what would she be doing in it? Where would she be?
Oh, she'd be busy with her blender or her bread maker. You know, her oven would have a roast in it. My father always said he'd know that mother was ready to do him in if she served him a meal out of a box.
And that was only kind of a joke. Ruth really did see food and cooking as matters of life and death because of something that happened in 1955. Ruth's husband, Gordon, Janet's dad,
had come down with bladder cancer.
He was young, in his 40s.
I remember him going in for surgeries and all, and we'd go visit at the hospital.
Before one surgery, Janet remembers, the doctors were talking about the general anesthesia they were going to use on her dad. Her mom overheard them and explained that he'd had a bad reaction to it in an earlier surgery.
Stopped his heart for 3 minutes.
Ruth said instead of general anesthesia, he needed a spinal block, but the doctors ignored her.
So she actually rode the gurney into the surgical room, laying across his body, saying, "You will not give him anesthesia."
That's the kind of person she was.
The kind of person she was. She was determined. So there you go. That was how she looked at everything.
As for Janet's dad's cancer,
fortunately, he got most of it out. Cut a lot of it out. But mother then wanted it to stay out because bladder cancer is one of those that can reoccur.
And so Ruth started reading up on the latest science about cancer and its potential causes, which led her to these studies on
the potential role of chemical additives and pesticide residues in food.
Angie Boyce is a bioethicist at Johns Hopkins who's written about Ruth Desmond. She says Ruth started looking into the emerging science about these new chemicals that, in the last few decades, food manufacturers were adding to food, and studies that linked some of them to cancer in lab animals. The science was still uncertain, but it raised questions for Ruth about how safe the food was that she was feeding her family, and more importantly, who was supposed to be in charge of figuring out what was safe? And so,
at that point, and I think, you know, this is so Ruth Desmond, she calls the FDA.
They're named the Food and Drug Administration, after all. So Ruth wants to know what they're doing about these chemicals.
And they tell her, if you're interested in this, why don't you, you know, you're local.
She was in Arlington, Virginia, remember, just down the road from the FDA.
Why don't you attend this hearing we're going to have on food additives?
And so Ruth does. The FDA was having these hearings on food additives because at the time, food was in the middle of a complete transformation, prompted by
America goes to war.
Peter Hutt teaches food and drug law at Harvard. Since the 1960s, he's been a lawyer for some of the biggest food companies around.
During World War II, the food science industry went to work and totally changed the American food supply because they were making food to feed our troops all over the world. So that's how the food supply began to change. It became to be a processed food, an engineered food, if you will.
When the war ended, the two biggest industries left standing in America were the chemical industry and the food industry.
People were experimenting with all sorts of chemicals used to preserve foods.
Suzanne Junod is a historian at the FDA.
Honestly, no one knew if they were safe or not, in what amounts they might or might not be safe.
And then, in early November of 1959, just before Thanksgiving, this happened.
We interrupt this program for a special news bulletin.
The FDA announced that inspectors had discovered a crop of cranberries contaminated with a weed killer known to cause cancer in animals. According to federal regulations, farmers were supposed to spray the chemical long enough before harvest that it had time to wear off the berries. But apparently, some bogs got sprayed too late. This was especially jarring for Ruth, Janet says, because
Father liked her to make her famous cranberry jelly from scratch.
The government made a public announcement, warned that if you didn't know exactly where your cranberries came from, this year you should keep them off the Thanksgiving table. And the nation freaked out. Overnight, cranberries disappeared from store shelves. Some states banned the sale of cranberries altogether. Janet remembers her mom reading about it all in the paper.
It was a scandal. They had sprayed the cranberries, and here they are laying out in the grocery stores. And then you find out what they've done to the food before it even gets to the grocery store. And she said, oh my God, you know, I'm killing my husband when I think I'm trying to help him.
Cranberry, cranberry blue.
Housewives panicked about what to do without their favorite holiday condiment. This song hit the airwaves about the brand new worry all over the nation.
All cranberry got contamination. If you want to be sure of not getting sick, we'll touch a cranberry with a 10-foot stick.
But the FDA got blamed for overreacting. Richard Nixon and JFK, both running for president, flouted government warnings and very publicly consumed cranberries on the campaign trail. Cranberry growers argued that people would have to eat carloads of cranberries for the pesticide residue to do any harm, and hanged an FDA official in effigy.
Cranberry, cranberry blue.
But while lots of Americans were cursing the FDA, Ruth was cheering.
And said, I'm going to do something about this.
And when there were cranberry hearings in 1959, an organization she'd recently co-founded, the Federation of Homemakers, made a statement defending how the FDA handled the situation, condemning those in the cranberry industry whose, quote, sole concern seems to be a financial one. But this was only a dress rehearsal for something much bigger in Ruth Desmond's future as a consumer activist. Ruth first got wind of this thing when she was sitting in an FDA office and noticed something on the desk, an announcement sparked by a covert action the FDA had recently executed on behalf of peanut butter.
Peanut butter. To hear more from Chrissy Clark about how Ruth helped change the way we think about food and government regulations through peanut butter, subscribe to the podcast, The Uncertain Hour, wherever you get your podcasts.